informative, and engaging. Rick Munn. Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, locked and loaded. Another day we are locked, and another day we're loaded. Thursday, 26th of May, 2022. Anno Domini, the year of our Lord, 2022. What is going on around the world, you may be thinking to yourself, if you've just woken up from sleep, maybe you've just woken up from a hard night on the alcohol, I don't know, maybe you've just came out of a coma and you're wondering what's happening in the world. Let me give you just a little breakdown here. Let's start off in Australia. Daniel Andrews. Some of you may have heard of this guy, Daniel Andrews. Yes, he has rejected expert suggestions that Victoria's hospital system is chronically underfunded and chronically understaffed. Instead, Daniel Andrews is blaming the health crisis on COVID-19. Yes, so Dan has rejected expert suggestions that the hospital systems in Victoria are chronically underfunded and understaffed, and instead is pointing the finger at COVID. And if you try this yourself, if you're listening, point your finger somewhere and you'll see something interesting. There are three other fingers pointing back in your direction. So, Mr. Andrews, I say, as you point that crooked, maybe arthritic finger of yours towards COVID-19, let me say that there are three of your malignant little fingers pointing right back at you. So take ownership of the mess that you have created and stop trying to blame COVID-19. Okay, let's hop across to the US. Listen to this. I'm sure this has happened in Australia too, but there's no proof as per now. Dr. Paul Alexander in America has said that US hospital chief executive officers and senior doctors that were too valuable to suspend when they refused the jab were offered fake vaccine cards. Imagine that. Imagine being offered fake vaccine cards by the crooked medical profession in America. Who would have thought that was even possible? But yes, this is bubbling into the light now. A lot of rocks are being overturned right now, and a lot of cockroaches and insects are scuttling out from under those rocks. This is just the beginning of it. So that's in America. Doctors and CEOs offered fake vaccine cards when they refused the jab because they were too valuable to suspend. Well, let's see that one come back and bite them on the backside. Lastly, in the UK, online learning tools recommended by the British government were found to harvest pupils' data during the pandemic. The company confirmed that pupils were monitored when they used the technology and that some third parties also had access to the information held. So they kick the kids out of school, they separate them from their friends, they lock them down, they attack their mental health, and then to add insult to injury, or to pour salt into the proverbial wounds, they then monitor these kids while they're online, maybe watching them on the video cameras, on their Zoom calls, seeing what they're logged into, how much time they're spending online, and then they sell the information on to third parties. As I get older, by the day, by the week, by the month, there is nothing that surprises me anymore. There is no depths to which these thugs will not sink. So that's just a little opening salvo for whoever you are listening in today. This is Locked and Loaded on TNT Radio.
Government couldn't stop a flu-like virus, and now they want you to believe they can stop the Earth's climate from changing? The voice of reason is TNT Radio.
Okay, I'm joined straight out of the blocks, straight out of the gates, by none other than my good friend, Mr. Kevin Loughrey, operating out of Ballina in Australia. Kevin and I speak every Thursday, and I'm blessed to be able to do that. We have a lot to talk about this morning, Kevin. There's been some carnage and shenanigans in Australia over this last 7 days. You know, I want to talk about a few things with you. I'm gonna poke the hornet's nest to begin with, and I want to talk about the elections. I want to do a little bit of post-mortem with you on the elections, and then I want to turn the spotlight on our new, or should I say, your new. He's not my prime minister. Your new prime minister. Thank God he's not my prime minister, mind you. Our first minister is arguably just as bad, but I'm not going to go down that road. We're going to look at Anthony Albanese, a.k.a. Albo, a.k.a. Muppet. But before we go down that road, let's think about the elections. And let's talk about how people can connect with you, because I'm terrible. I'm a really bad host. I keep forgetting about people's contact details and how they can link up with guests. Kevin has a website, kevinlochray.com. .au. That's very important. Kevin Loughray, LOUGHREY.com.au. Everything that he has researched pretty much, and his ideas, suggestions on all sorts of things like how to improve business, software, the real business that's going on with the climate, it's all there. And he also has just launched himself into the business of making videos and uploading them onto social media, especially on Rumble. So if you go into Kevin Loughray Rumble, Google it, and you'll find his videos, of which he's starting to rack them up at a rate of knots, I might add. And they're very good, and they're very informative, covering a very wide range of topics. So it's a little plug for you, and we'll do some more of that later on. But for now, let's talk about these elections. UAP, One Nation, Lib Dems, Liberals, Greens, Labour, what happened?
A lot happened. You mentioned that I made a number of videos, and in those videos I deal with things as to why people should vote below the line or vote above the line when you're dealing with our system of election. We have a complicated system of election for the Senate where you can either vote below the line, in which case you have to specify 12 numbers in order of preference. If you vote above the line, then you only have to allocate 6. When you're voting above the line, you're actually voting according to party lines, because the party then will divvy up the Senate votes according to the favourites within the party. I make the point within my video that this allocation of preference by the party is determined by a range of factors, often favouritism, cronyism, the number of years that some person has laboured faithfully for the party, but scant consideration is given as to whether this person would actually make a good representative for the Australian people or for the state which they would represent in the case of the Senate. In the case of the House of Representatives, I can speak about the UAP in particular, because I joined the UAP and ran as a Senate candidate. But the very first thing that I found out about the UAP is that it does not compete at state or local level. And one of the reasons for this is that the founder of the UAP, Clive Palmer, doesn't believe that there should be state governments. And in that, Clive and I disagree, and I'm quite happy to talk about that. I once, by the way, used to be an advocate of getting rid of state governments. I am no longer. The reason that I've decided that state governments are necessary is that it's necessary to have diversity in government. It's necessary that government is as close as possible to the people. In that way, the elected representatives will suffer from the environment that they create if they're close to the people that they're, you know, basically governing. And also the people can get hold of the representative. You know, they can actually communicate to the representative whether they're happy or unhappy. When you have a centralised government, it is very, very hard for the people to actually get contact with the government, and you end up with tyranny. So although it costs us something like $65 billion a year to run state governments at this moment, it is actually better for democracy. And in fact, it would even be better if certain things were devolved down to the local councils. We have about 600 councils within Australia. And one of the things which I've advocated for a long time is that we get hold of some open source software, namely an enterprise resource planning system, and using university students' paid bursaries to work during their holidays, developed this using One Council as a prototype. And when I say that too, the council has to agree to this. You know, we've got 600 councils to choose from. We approach all 600 and say, look, this is our plan. We'd like to set up a programming team in your council to duplicate or to replicate, would be a better word, your present computer systems and put them all across onto this open source software arrangement. Now, if you did that and you're using university students, then when those university students graduate, you've now got a support base which is in your community that can support this software which you're developing specifically for councils. As you get it working properly for one council, you then show it off to the other councils. The end result is that you want all the councils to be using the same computer system, but to have ownership of it. That is to say, they can alter this any way they like using programming teams, which they can recruit locally. The only obligation they have is that they must share the results of whatever they have produced. And you have then all of the councils communicating with each other, sharing their experiences, and you end up with a best of breed, communally owned software package that's maintained by people in the local community. At this moment, as I said, we have 600 councils, and we're most probably using, I'm only guessing, but I would suspect we're most probably using 50 or 60 different software packages, all of which are purchased from overseas. It costs us billions of dollars across the whole of Australia, and it makes it impossible for us to benchmark one council against another, because they have different databases, different procedures, and so forth. Whereas if you got everybody to use the same software, which, by the way, I have to emphasize, they develop it to suit their particular management style,
yeah,
it is then possible for you to do proper benchmarking. So
okay,
there's one that, you know, that I went off on this tributary simply because I was saying that we have to put government as close as we can to the people, and the UAP doesn't even have a branch structure. There's no camaraderie between the members of the UAP.
Well, tell me this. And again, you know, I've tried to cast an eye over as much of what happened as possible with all the different parties, with all the different independents and all the vote swings that were going on. The one thing that I did notice was there was a lot of money thrown at this by a lot of people, obviously, to try and get people into the Senate, to try and get people elected.
Yes.
Clive Palmer, I believe, is a very wealthy individual. He threw a lot of cash at this. There's figures of between $50 and $100 million were thrown at this. The bottom line is, when it came to the outcome, I seen a post, I don't use Facebook, but someone had put a cut and paste of a post that he had put up on Facebook that they were challenging some process that was going on, or they were challenging some of the results that were happening. What's the business with that, or what's his position now with UAP going forward? Is it still something that he's going to fund, do you think? And is it something that they're going to reassess and take on board, for example, feedback that we don't need a centralized government, we need local government, we need to have local points of contact? Where are the UAP at as per now, from what you can see?
Okay, you've raised two points. The first is the method by which preferences are allocated. It appears, and I've really not been able to get my head around it, a chap called Troper Field came up with a video where he showed how marbles would be distributed and how if everybody put the majors last, that the minor parties, by sharing these marbles between each other, they would end up being on top of the heap. Now, that didn't happen because the AEC has brought in basically like a two-party preferred arrangement. And this actually helps parties. In fact, I was oblivious to all of this before I actually ran for office. And as I've gotten deeper into it, I see that we have really serious flaws in our system of democracy. But to answer that question and to finish it off, close it off, the method by which the AEC distributed preferences was not in accordance with the way that Troper Field believed that it was going to happen. And so as a consequence, the minor parties didn't have the level of influence that they expected to have. Okay, now the next thing you mentioned was what's the UAP going to be? if the UAP survives, if and look, my feeling, my heartfelt feeling is that the UAP must not have Clive Palmer as its head, and it must not have, it must not be dependent upon Clive Palmer for its money, because that is really, really toxic in the minds of everyday Australians. And when I was campaigning, I had the most extreme, almost to a physical assault, because I was walking around with the UAP badge on, and the person so hated Clive Palmer that they, you know, he wasn't going to have a thing to do with me, and he wanted me out of his face and all the rest of it. And no amount of me trying to calm him down was going to work. So really,
that's not good. I mean, like, that's not a good way to start off. If I mean, like, let's face it, you know, donations can come from here, there, everywhere. You know, maybe having someone as a front person and as a figurehead who maybe has a little bit of how would you say baggage is not the greatest strategy going forward. Even if he was in the wings, he could be donating anonymously, he could be putting people in. That's different. But to have yourself in the limelight when you're not maybe universally liked or even predominantly liked is maybe not the greatest strategy, is it?
No. And look, the next thing, it's really fundamental. If the leader of your party, which was Craig Kelly, loses his seat, that's devastating to the party. So the top priority should have been to make sure that Craig Kelly got elected. Pour all the resources into the electorate of Hughes. Now, I rang up a good friend of mine who is in Hughes. And by the way, I first met Craig Kelly soon after he'd been elected. He took over from a lady called Dana Vale. And I was very impressed by him. I went to his Hughes office and met with him, and he was a lovely person. He was absolutely scrupulously honest with me and frank. And you know, basically I said, this is a good guy. But Craig sold his house in Hughes. That was widely publicised. That Craig only had to make the most minor infraction and the media were onto him, like white on rice. They were really, you know, they were doing everything they could to badmouth him. So that's the first thing. Craig wasn't in his electorate. And all of his signs said, authorised by Craig Kelly, Brisbane. And people leapt on that. Now, Craig should have retained a residence in Hughes, and Craig should have been operating out of Hughes. He shouldn't have been anywhere near Brisbane. He shouldn't have been anywhere.
So where did he move? Was it was it a strategy?
I don't know. I suspect that he sold up after he'd left the Liberal Party and he joined up with Clive Palmer. But it was really, really the wrong thing to do. If you're if you're going to represent people, you've got to live in their electorate. You've got to be the face on the street. You've got to meet people every day. Now, the next thing, the next really serious strategic error is that the greatest threat to Australia's prosperity are the Greens, and next to them are the teachers' unions. The teachers are teaching the children science fiction. They're teaching children that carbon dioxide materially affects the Earth's atmospheric temperature, and that is absolute fiction. I'm telling you this as a person who studied thermodynamics to fourth-year university level with honours. I say this often because I've actually met up with a journalist who said, there are lots of scientists, you know, that the 97% of scientists agree that carbon dioxide is causing warming of the Earth. And I said, well, that's just rubbish. And besides which, I am a scientist and I'm a highly trained scientist. And I'm telling you, it's rubbish. And I'm happy to talk with any other so-called scientist and argue the point, because it is rubbish. Now, we should have put up signs all through Hughes demolishing the Greens, and we should have done that here in Richmond. All you have to do is go and get the raw data from all around the world, from the various climatology networks around the world. I've shown this before. It's on my video. Every single one of them has a downward trend. None of them are going up, except the Australian one, which is from 1988 onwards, after James Hansen gave his bogus presentation to Congress. The wick was lit to this huge hoax, And the Australian Bureau of Meteorology public servants in there leapt to the challenge. They changed the Stevenson screens from large Stevenson screens to small ones, which would register a higher temperature. They changed the method of measurement from analog to digital, which gives you a higher temperature measurement. And then they didn't run the two stations in parallel with each other for, say, a period of 5 years so that you could properly calibrate the new systems against the old ones, and that way you could then consistently determine trends. On top of that, in league with the IPCC, which is a manifestly corrupt organisation, highly political, they commenced this nonsense of homogenisation. And homogenization destroys trends. You know, if you've got a weather station that's away from urban conurbation, it hasn't been encroached by vegetation, it basically remains in a similar state throughout the whole of its existence, and you look at the temperature coming from that weather station, you will find, and I'm willing to bet any amount of money on this, by the way. I've just died for the day when someone said, oh, that's not right, Sarah. Okay, $100,000 that I'm right. We'll get the temperature data. It's handwritten. Well, that was another thing. Craig Kelly found that the little buggers were not transcribing faithfully the temperatures from the handwritten records into the computer database. And Dr. Jennifer Maharassi has been trying for years to get them to run two types of station in parallel, the analog and the digital in parallel, and they steadfastly refuse to do it. This is large.
The climate thing, right, is definitely something that I want to touch on with you, especially some of the communications that have been going on since Albanese has been sworn in, which I believe happened on Monday of this week. Before we get down that, I want to park that a little bit. We've got a quick break to take just for 2 minutes, and when we come back, let's tie up the loose ends with UAP business, and we can jump into Albo plus climate change, because this is obviously something people need to be aware of, because the hysteria is being put in front of people now that it's the greatest existential threat to Australia and the people living in the Pacific. Listen, let's take a deep breath and let's go to town in the greens when we come back in 2 minutes on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Michael Parker.
You've always been associated with the left and the progressive movements. Why is it that you can see some of these infringements on liberty and civil rights, but many of your peers cannot, and actually detract from you for doing so?
Yeah, that is a great and timely question. I just want to note that, you know, as I said a minute ago, in the United States, for sure, it's the left doing the bad things, and conservatives and libertarians are up in arms, and the left isn't. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But, you know, in Britain, it's the same script with a conservative leader, Boris Johnson. And yep. In Australia, it's an even worse place down the line of fascism, you know, also with conservative leadership. And in Canada, it's liberal leadership with the same script. So these are transnational, transpartisan scripts now coming from above the level of nation states, above the level of parliaments and, you know, congresses.
Deprogram with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification. 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are opportunity zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
This is the sound of a generation rising above. The Commemorative Air Force honors the heroes of yesterday while educating and inspiring the heroes of tomorrow. You can learn more at soundsofhistory.org.
Where progress is influenced by revolution and evolution. This is today's News Talk Radio.
TNT.
TNT.
Okay, Kevin Loughery and I are chewing the fat, shooting the breeze concerning the post-election fallout. Let me just say, so listen, we try and analyze things. We try and dig into things. People scratch their heads, Kevin. I find there's a lot of head scratching going on at the minute. A lot of people are asking questions. They've got inquisitive minds. Me too, by the way. So that's why I'm sort of probing you a little bit for a little bit of inside insight on, for example, UAP. Now, as a non-Aussie, but someone who's been following the Australian build-up to this election for quite some time now, as you know, you and I have talked about it, there was a lot of expectation on various parties, smaller parties, freedom parties. There was the UAP, the Lib Dems, the One National were sort of running alongside each other and encouraging people to vote down the majors, to vote up the minor parties, and to whatever they do not vote Greens. That was the big one. The mantra was, you know, go Green, it's game over. Okay, so what happened was we expected the Libs to lose a market share of votes, which of course happened, but a lot more than I think they even were budgeting for. But that shifted predominantly to Labour. Labour increased their vote share in Western Australia after Mark McGowan has been effectively running the place one step short of a concentration camp for the last, 2 years, but they increased their vote share. Victoria, you've got Victoria under Dan Andrews. He's a Labour guy. These Labour Party increased the vote shares, but disturbingly more than anything, in my humble opinion, so did the Greens. The Greens had an absolute field day. So with UAP, to sort of put a full stop on this one, and this is just so I can clarify in my own head, there were several things with the benefit of hindsight, and listen, We all can look back over our shoulders and say, okay, I should have done this, I should have done that. So we're just, in a non-judgmental way, we're just analyzing things. Okay, what could have been done better? Well, you might have had a different figurehead in there. You might have had anonymous funding in there. You might not have transferred, Craig Kelly from the Hughes into Brisbane. That maybe wasn't a great strategy. I followed Craig on social media. I thought he was a very good spokesperson. I thought he had a massive amount of support, at least on social media, but it didn't translate into results. So literally, is there a question mark now over the future of the party? Will it be wound up? Will he go and join another party? Do you think? I'm only asking you to maybe, speculate on this, and that's all it is. What do you think this is going to end up for the AP? And then we'll move on to the Green business.
Look, I think the party's mortally wounded. And that's not to say it couldn't recover, but it's taken a really serious wound. As I've indicated to you, I think that they use the word root and branch reform. The very first thing, if I was running the party, is that I would establish branches in every electorate. I'd be competing in state. I would focus on electorates which I could win, or what I think I could win, and then I would make them test cases. I would try out various techniques in those, and if I find them to be successful, I would then replicate that in the next election. We've got state elections coming up next year. We could, if we wanted to, here. I've got something like 882 members on the books for the electorate of Richmond, and the electorate of Ballina overlaps the electorate of Richmond. So it would be possible to create a UAP branch, in fact, a number of branches in the Ballina electorate, the Ballina state electorate, and compete in the in the state thing, and only do one. You know, don't try to do more. Or if you have volunteers, if other people want to try and copy, but if I was doing it, I'd be doing it here, and I would put a big crosshair on the Greens. Now, you made a good point there that Labor increased its vote, but the reality is, what happened was Labor got the people who were not prepared to go as far left as the Greens, but still they believe in climate change. They believe in this baloney, and Labor was talking about zero net emissions and all the rest of the rubbish. So Labor were making all the right noises, and that's why Labor got the Guernsey. The Liberals lost. If Morrison, and by the way, you know, I'm really, really super disappointed with Morrison. I know now why and where he came from and all the rest of it. And I think it's a good thing that the party's gotten rid of him. He's no longer Prime Minister. He was awful. Because
he was.
A lot of those people, me included, the reason I left the National Party was vaccine mandates and the fact that the Australian government prevented me and my loved ones from gaining access to early treatment. That infuriated me. What right has the government got to get between me and my doctor? It's tyrannical. It's terrible. Now, they had the ability to call the secretary for the Department of Health into the office. The cabinet could have done this, brought in Skerrick, told him they no longer had a job and to go, you know, dig a ditch or do something useful, but don't show your face around government offices again. And Morrison only had to pick up the phone and talk to Vladimir Zelenko, Brian Tyson, Simone Gold, Professor Peter McCulloch, or even locally, Robert Clancy, Professor Robert Clancy, or Professor Thomas Barodi. He just had to pick up the phone and talk to them, and he would have been given the good oil, and he would have known, okay, let's stop this nonsense. No lockdowns, no border closures. Early treatment, let's get early treatment out there. No vaccines. These are highly dangerous. We shouldn't be using them. Instead of that, Morrison was part of the deal. Mm-hmm. He went along with Hunt. Hunt, in my view, there's something very, very bad with Hunt. Hunt was the one, by the way, who also stopped Tony Abbott from being able to audit the Bureau of Meteorology's temperature data and their means of collection. So Hunt's been involved in this World Economic Forum globalist business for a long time. And he, you know, there is something very, very bad in my view about Hunt. And I'm really suspicious. I'm really suspicious about Morrison as well. I think, you know, they are not nice people, and I'm good riddance to them. I'm so pleased they're gone.
He was openly affiliated with the World Economic Forum, and just before the elections happened last Saturday, when he was asked, would he support Australia, ceding their sovereignty to the World Health Organization. He said, of course. He said, no one's called for this more than me. We need a unified approach. So he made no bones of the fact that he would have been more than happy to run into the arms of the World Health Organization. But listen, I was no fan of his either. I thought he was wishy-washy. I respect people that I disagree with as long as they're firm in their stance. So if you and I were polar opposites about things, okay, but you were firm in your stance about what you believed in, I would actually respect that greatly. Even though we may differ, I would say, well, you know what, that guy and I differ, but at least he sticks by his guns and he doesn't blow to the left and right. He's not a yes man and he's not a man for all seasons. He's steadfast in his beliefs, okay? Morrison was the polar opposite. He blew this way, he blew that way. He tried to please everyone.
He was fraudulent.
He was actually
fraudulent. You see, he said, I don't agree with vaccine mandates, or we won't mandate vaccines. But when Malcolm Roberts put forward a bill in Parliament, the Liberals would not support it. And I actually spoke to a Liberal senator, and that Liberal senator told me that he approved the vaccine mandates. That just blew me away, because that fellow was a friend of mine. And I was just devastated that that person would take that view. Look, you've touched on something else too. You may remember earlier, and it seemed as though I went off on a tributary, but I must admit that I did raise this at that time to pave the way for this. I said that the best sort of government is one that is decentralized and closest to the people. to give, to have a centralized health situation is absolutely, thoroughly, totally wrong. Because if you allow people, if you allow every country to do their own thing, you will see some succeed and some will fail. And by that, you can then work out what is the best process. Now, Sweden is a standout. Sweden did not go into lockdowns, did not mandate masks. But the one thing, I tried to contact, by the way, Anders Tegnell, and he wouldn't pick up the phone. So instead, I rang the Stockholm Health Authority, and I got to speak to I got to speak to a doctor. I almost gave out the gender of the doctor. But I wanted to ask about early treatment, and that doctor said, I can't talk about that or I'd lose my job. So for some reason or another, Anders Tegnell would not even, and I'm sure Anders Tegnell knew absolutely that hydroxychloroquine in combination with azithromycin and zinc and aspirin is a highly effective cure for COVID if you get it really early. You've got to get it more or less day one for it to work. And if you do it 36 hours later, you cure it, full stop. Mm-hmm. I know this for a fact. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, Anders wouldn't do that. But the moment you allow centralized control, you don't have the benefit then of seeing different approaches. And you're more or less putting all of your money on black on the roulette wheel. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't turn up there, you've lost everything. And that's what will happen.
That's a problem.
This is madness incarnate. This is absolute madness. And it speaks to the poor quality of Morrison and all of the other idiots in Canberra that they would even countenance such a thing. We want dispersed. We want a distributed system. We want diversity in the way that we deal with problems because then, but we need a really good information system so that we can then accurately track how each particular approach does. We need to be able to share the results amongst everybody because you have to take the view that at their core, everybody is trying to do the right thing. Every doctor is trying to save their patient. So if you give the doctors good access to all of the information, they'll all work it out. You know, it's got to be left to the individual doctors. That's how diversified or distributed or devolved it has to be. Mm-hmm. Centralized control is really, really bad.
In effect, that goes back, which you rightly said, it links back to what you were saying even about the UAP strategy about having a centralized government system rather than a branch government system where you have a local point of contact or maybe a constituent office that you can go down and you can knock on the door or you can make an appointment and you can have a face-to-face or direct communication with your local representative. You need that. And I have a feeling now, this is something that they say if it comes in, I'm talking about the WHO pandemic treaty, that it could be 2024 before it comes in. It may not come in, it may come in earlier than that, or it may come in bang on time, but I fear they're setting a precedence with this, that if they can get this over the line and they can get 194 member state buy-in, it will not stop with a pandemic response, because that's what they're very careful to position this as, to say it's only in relation to pandemic identification and response. Now, there's other things going on, as you know, that they're pushing the fear agenda on, of which we touched on and we'll go into in more detail, the climate change shenanigans. Okay, so there was an ad just before you and I went live. I didn't catch the lady's name, but she was saying that climate change is the single biggest threat to Australians and our Pacific family. We need to identify it or it will finish us off. I think if the WHO can get away with a global pandemic treaty, then surely there will be a global climate treaty, which will be ushered in for the greater good, as the old saying goes. We're going to take a break because we're going to launch into this one big time, all right? We're going to launch into this one, so I don't want our flow to be interrupted. So I'm going to take a break now, and when we come back, we're going to hammer this one straight over the line. Climate change. Brace yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to start talking climate, and you better be seated for this one. This is Locked and Loaded TNT Radio. Don't go away.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Former President Donald Trump will be very pleased to hear that his endorsed representative, Marjorie Taylor Greene, won with a massive 70% of the vote in Georgia's House Republican District 14 primary. She was challenged by five other GOP candidates, of which her nearest competitor, Jennifer Strawn, received only 17% of the vote. Marjorie Taylor Greene ran a strong conservative campaign and called to impeach Joe Biden, fire Fauci, ban the vaccine and mask mandate, and expose the stolen 2020 presidential election. While she fought against the military-industrial complex and voted against the latest $40 billion military and aid package for Ukraine, her opponent Strawn claimed she served as a megaphone for Putin and that, quote, Americans know that Russia is the aggressor and the sole cause of this crisis, unquote. I would say the voters in this district knew better. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Researcher Elizabeth Woodworth has examined numerous areas of suppressions by TNI with respect to COVID. TNI partners, including Facebook and Twitter, silenced views about a SARS-2 connection to the Wuhan Biosafety Labs before relenting many months later. Other areas of suppression include denial of early treatments for COVID and censorship of health professionals. Those censored include Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, epidemiologist, Stanford University, and Dr. Robert Malone, inventor of mRNA technology platform, and many more. TNI vigorously censored frontline physicians who have saved thousands of lives with early COVID-19 treatments. Dr. Zelenko in New York, Doctors George Farid and Brian Tyson in California, America's frontline doctors founded by Dr. Simone Gold, and the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, FCCCA, led by ICU critical care physician Dr. Pierre Corey.
Mercy Ships is putting faith into action to help the forgotten poor. And our newest state-of-the-art hospital ship with volunteer medical staff and crew will double our ability to help those who need it most. Go to mercyships.org today.
If you want the jibby jab,
all right, enough.
Then you've come to the wrong station. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We mandate that the truth be told. And you know what? I don't know if you're aware of this or not, Kevin, but the 50 cals, the 50 cals are out and locked and loaded and pointed TNT Radio's direction. There's a sniper out there that would like to take the head clean off TNT Radio. We're starting to get a little bit of attention, let me just say, in the mainstream media on The Australian. We were going to sponsor... what's this? Is this an aerial attack or a bombardment? Is this bullfrog of yours coming back to the window? Kevin and I have very interesting, how would you say, sonic. Oh, what's that?
It's a 338 sniper round.
Okay, well, there you go. Maybe it's you with a rifle. I don't know. Maybe you're a double agent or you're some kind of government plant and you've been setting me up for a big fall. I don't know. But we're trying to sponsor an award ceremony for journalism in Australia. And yeah, there's been a little bit of kickback on that one, a little bit of eyebrow raising and a little bit of head scratching and shaking of the head from left to right among various institutions and potential sponsors. Whether we not or we go ahead with that, I don't know, but we're starting to be branded, anti-narrative and spreading, stories that are, you know, about Ukraine and about COVID and about vaccines and whatnot. So listen, it's no bad thing. They say there's no such thing as bad publicity. And as Oscar Wilde once said, there's only one thing worse than people talking about you. It's people not talking about you. So let them talk, Kevin. Let them talk. And be aware, you're now going to be tarred with the TNT brush. Just watch your back is all I'm saying as you move around balling up. Just watch your back. But climate, let's talk climate, okay? A little bit of a setup to this. Albanese's in. ScoMo is out. Albanese has been, how would I say, courted since Monday by two fascists, one of which goes by the name of Justin Trudeau, who's the alleged Prime Minister of Canada. He says, when we spoke today, I congratulated Prime Minister Anthony Albanese on his election. We discussed everything from fighting climate change to creating economic growth. Anthony, I'm looking forward to working with you and moving forward with progressive ideas. So he's betting in with Trudeau when it comes to climate and the economy. Australians, if that doesn't set the alarm bells ringing, I don't know what else. Well, Albo himself has put out a tweet where he's sitting looking very smug on the telephone. And it says, great to speak to Italian PM Mussolini, Draghi today. We discussed the strong bond between our two countries and working together on climate change and the Ukraine. So here we have Trudeau, here we have Draghi, here we have in the middle, little Albo, and guess what? They all want to pal together and talk about climate change. Are you happy about that? Does that not make you feel all warm and fuzzy?
It disgusts me. We've had the coldest summer on record lately. We had a situation where we had a hot sea, a hot ocean off our coast. That gave rise to large amounts of moist air, which was blowing onto the mainland. And as soon as it hit the mountain range here, the water fell out of the sky like a bucket. And then I have this demented lady whose name is Mandy Nolan, who's a comedian, by the way. That's her background, and she ought to stick to that. And she's waving her hands and arms like a windmill, saying that all of this flooding was the result of climate change. And somebody in the audience quipped, but didn't Tim Flannery say that the dams would never be filled again because of climate change? Now, let's get the story straight. The reason that we had unseasonal floods here was many. I said the floods were man-made because they closed off a canal, which would have taken 30% of the water down to Evans Head. They haven't dredged the mouth of the Richmond. The conservationists stopped the building of the Dunoon Dam, and it just goes on and on and on. These floods shouldn't have happened. And they certainly weren't the result of global warming. They're the result of a cooler atmosphere. It causes precipitation of water from the atmosphere. Anybody would know that except the Greens. Yeah. And I come back to this. Look, there isn't global warming. We're heading into a grand solar minimum. And that, if you want to, you can look at Professor Dr. Valentina Zarkova of Northumbria University and her team. They've been able to model the two dynamos that are inside the sun. There's a collapsing magnetic field in the sun. This happens, by the way, every 347 odd years. The last one was called the Maunder Minimum. On top of that, in coordination with that, waning sun cycles. The sun has an 11-year cycle, which interestingly, so does the orbit of Jupiter. And the two are thought to be related to each other. Jupiter actually exerts gravitational force on the sun. Now, and the sun goes up and down over an 11-year period. But their maxima of these cycles is getting less and less and less. And that's why they call it a grand solar minimum. When you have the collapse of the magnetic field in synchronism with a waning radiation from the sun, you end up with a very cold Earth. In 1975, the National Center of Atmospheric Research, US National Center of Atmospheric Research, published a graph and was warning that we're heading into the next little ice age. And I've seen that. I've actually physically gone to the newspaper that out of archives to see the graph to make sure that this wasn't fictional, and it is there. But NASA have now, and this is where, when you say NASA, by the way, you're talking of a fat little balding public servant called Michael Mann, and he and his little bloody troglodytes have manipulated the data such that Now that graph no longer looks like the one which the National Center of Atmospheric Research published in 1975. Right now, a fellow called Tim Ball, a lovely fellow, a Canadian, said disparaging things about Michael Mann. So Michael Mann, in high dudgeon, took him to court and for defamation of his character or whatever. But Michael Mann was called upon to put forward the data which supports his hockey stick, and he would not do it. He can't do it because it's a fraud. It's fiction. It's just like the BOM here has been homogenizing our temperature records in order to stop the trends being obvious. The trend is across the world, you can go and look at the raw data in numerous climatology networks, you will see that it's all down. Now, I've made a video of this. It's if people go to my Rumble channel, it's called Kevin Lockray's Thoughts and Opinions, or it could be Thoughts and Opinions of Kevin Lockray. Who cares? But if you type that into Rumble, you'll find me. Yeah. Have a look at the one where I say, look, this is what climate change has cost us. The cost of electricity has risen 5.5 times the CPI in this country, the Consumer Price Index, for those who don't know what a CPI is. In other words, in real terms, the cost of electricity has gone up 5.5 times what it used to be. We're now paying 25 cents a kilowatt hour while China pays 5 cents a kilowatt hour. We cannot compete. And if these idiots that are in control have their way, they will double that again. In other words, we're going to be paying almost 10 times more for electricity than the Chinese by the time the doing's done. I've looked at their figures. I've modelled it for an 8-gigawatt system, which the New South Wales government reckons it's going to put in, which will involve pumped hydro, and it actually doubles the cost of electricity by the time the doing's done. It's nuts, total nuts.
Actually, we're literally scratching the surface on this business, because whilst it sounds good, and I've said this all along, the green agenda sounds absolutely fantastic. It sounds good on paper. And if you had no clue as to what it actually would result in, then you would probably be supportive of it. And that's why people flocked out to vote green. So it's positioned that we're going to make the world a cleaner place. Who would argue with that? The world's going to be a nicer place. Who would argue with that? The wildlife will be protected. Who would argue about that? Okay, we're gonna set the future generations up for, you know, using solar and wind. Who would argue with that? It sounds absolutely wonderful. It sounds like they're painting this vision of utopia, almost going back to the Garden of Eden. It sounds absolutely beautiful and wonderful. But what does it translate to? Listen, let's cut the crap here. Forget the sales pitch. What does it translate to? What it translates to, and you've just mentioned it, is 5 times CPI increase for electricity, etc., could go to 10 times in the middle of a global collapse. And the reports are coming in today. I just seen a thing flashing up there from The Guardian in Australia to say that the price of generating this electricity is going up even higher as we speak. And in the UK, they're increasing the price cap by another 30 to 40% by October, and they've just done a 54% increase in April. That's 90% increase a year. So for all the pontificating and for all the spouting about how good it is and how wonderful it is, it's going to cripple us financially and drive people off the edge. Am I overreacting?
No, you're not. Look, as an engineer, I'm telling my audience that this is science fiction. I've worked through the figures. In fact, I've actually had congratulatory emails coming from people who have worked as power engineers in the industry for 50 years, and they're saying, you're absolutely correct. Now, I don't actually have the expertise that those gentlemen have, but, you know, I just sat down and did the sums, and I did a rough scoping, and there is no way that that these solar panels and these windmills can compete with a coal-fired power station or a nuclear power station. Nuclear power is even cheaper than coal-fired power. So it's just total madness, total madness. And, you know, the fact is that our politicians couldn't organise a chook raffle at the local club, and yet they are sticking their sticky little fingers into the power grid. It ought to be left to people who know what they're doing. That you do not want politicians involved in this. They are truly, they're going to wreck it.
And by the way, that also links into another video that you made. I think it was the first video that you uploaded onto your Rumble channel, where you're talking about if somebody's in a position where they're calling the shots, for example, on health, they should have a health background, or they're calling the shots on climate change, they should have a scientific or at least a functional background in the things that they're actually talking about. And in case we get cut off here, because we've only got like 2 minutes left, Kevin has a Rumble site. He's uploading well, how would I say this, his thoughts and opinions, but also some factual breakdowns on issues such as climate change and voting structures and one thing and another. So if you go to Rumble, the video hosting site Rumble, and you search, you don't even need to add the thoughts and opinions. If you just search for Kevin Loughray, L-O-U-G-H-R-E-Y, because I did it this morning just to see if I could get in on your name. Loughray, Kevin Loughray, Rumble, you will come across his channel. Subscribe to it, watch the videos, leave feedback. I'm sure you would be glad to get some feedback on those videos.
I'd love feedback. Even bad feedback. I mean, even people who disagree with me, I'd love it if people disagree, because it's only then that you learn stuff.
Because, I mean, Mike Ryan does that to me all the time. He's always criticizing me. And, you know, I do take it on board, and I'm trying to improve myself. I'm only joking, by the way. But, yeah, and you also have a website, which is where I first encountered your output, kevinloughray.com.au, and it's a very extensive website covering a lot of different areas. So most of the stuff that you'll cover on the Rumble channel, you'll also be able to see on the website. So I want to just wrap this up, Kevin, and just appreciate you talking about this. I think what we'll do is, going forward as well, in addition to the current issues of the day, as you produce that video output, we'll do little breakdowns on some of the uploads that you've done, because you're obviously putting a lot of time and effort into the research. So I don't have to. I can just simply go on and watch you do a 5 to 10 minute summary on a topic, which is great. And all the references are there. So, Mr. Kevin Loughray, UAP, I think, have bit the dust. You never know. They could be like a phoenix rising from the ashes, or they could be like something in the toilet that will be flushed and will make their way to the ocean. I don't know. Time will tell. Kevin Loughray, you're an absolute diamond. Thank you for taking the time as normal and being so open and frank and informative and enthusiastic, especially about climate change. You're listening to Rick Munn, Locked and Loaded TNT Radio. We've got two guests coming on after the break. Don't go away. You don't want to miss this one.